Good day and welcome to Sarah and T, the Professional Vacation Rental Managers Podcast, coming to you from the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
And from the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. I'm Sarah Bradford from Winter Park and Steamboat Springs.
And I'm Tim Cafferty from the Outer Banks of North Carolina and Sandbridge in Virginia. Together, we bring you the first podcast focused solely on professionally managed vacation rentals, both domestic and abroad.
In the next 30 minutes, we hope you will join us on our journey as we dive into issues affecting folks like us, the professional vacation rental manager, allowing you to run your business more effectively, make more money, and most importantly, have fun doing it.
Okay, this week we have another content episode lined up for you. The last time we got together, we dove into 12 discussion points regarding owner onboarding. And Sarah, we got some great feedback from our listeners. Suffice to say, our listeners feel like there are more than 12 discussion points. It is a meaty topic, but I really enjoyed it. How about you?
I did too. And we're adding your suggestions on in Facebook so that we can keep that list going on top of the 12.
Okay. So that brings us to this week's episode. Sarah, you and I have discussed in several episodes how important it is to know what's going on in your company. And I think the genesis of this episode took place when you took some time out of your regular schedule to work on the front lines of your company to find out what was really going on there. So we are calling this episode, "Would You Do That to Your Mother?" Looking at what a real customer experience is at your vacation rental firm.
The new buzzword in our industry, of course, and all other businesses, seems to be the customer experience. And if you heard the John DeJulius episode, I think it was episode 33, a very popular one, he says, everybody will raise their hand. Yes, we take care of the customer experience. But when really push comes to shove, a very small percentage understand their true customer experience. What is really happening to that customer from the before they arrive to staying to after they depart. So today we want to dig deep and we want to go into how you can stop paying lip service to the customer experience word and actually create action items to really figure out what is your current customer experience and how do you want to change it? And I have to give a warning, Tim. This is not an easy process, nor is it a quick process. So everybody get your big pants on and make it through. And I just so hope a lot of people take us on to do this. It's going to improve the vacation rental industry in general if we can improve experiences across the globe.
Absolutely. I think you either called me or texted me and said, you know, there is nothing that replaces getting out of your office and figuring out what's really going on out there. It is so easy not to do it. We're challenging you today to do some of the things we're going to talk about so you can kind of pull the blinders back and say, oh my goodness, that's not what we need to be doing.
Yes. In fact, I challenge every listener to put something on their calendar right now, this week, for at least 2 hours, that you're going to go to some properties, you're going to meet with some staff, you're going to get out of your chair and see what's really happening. One of my favorite quotes I've come across lately is by a woman named Jean Bliss, the author of several customer service books, one which is entitled Make Mom Proud, back to Would You Do That to Your Mother? And it challenges business owners to ask, would you do that to your mother? Would you do that to your brother? She goes on and says, move from talk to action. Start small and prove it to yourself that you can do the work by identifying the 5 things you know get in the way of customers feeling and seeing value. So what are those 5 things that are bugging your customers is my little comment in there. And then she goes on to say, then unite the silos which impact the customer's ability to achieve their goals and rewire what you deliver, how you deliver and how you support and serve. Do it, prove it, and reset the organization to be able to repeat the process. And that reminds me of like a Bible verse used to study when I used to do Bible study. Yeah. There's so many nuggets in that quote, but uniting the silos which impact the customer's ability to achieve their goals, that is, it's just so key. So we're going to kind of play this podcast off of Gene's comment.
So excuse my ignorance, but you know I'm a little slow on things. When you talk about the silos, are you talking about policies and the way we're doing things or preventing our guests from getting what they want?
I think it could be that. I took it more as departments. Like inspections are over here doing this, but then guest experience, maybe if you call it that, or your front desk or your reservations are doing this, and they're not realizing how negatively they're working in their silos to affect this customer experience.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, if it weren't for all these customers, we could really get some work done around here, right?
Yeah. So maybe we could call Jean Bliss and have her on the program. Yeah, she can explain it better.
Good idea. Yeah. No, but yeah. You've actually had this experience yourself, right? Very recently.
Yes. And Tim, I want to know if you've had this too. I mean, I came and stayed at one of your properties, so maybe you felt this way about me. But this past week, my brother and his family, extended family, so there were 9 of them, came to Steamboat and stayed at one of our properties, paying guests. So they paid money. I didn't give it to them for free. And I noticed my behavior was interesting. I inspected the place myself. Note, I rarely inspect any home. I was sensitive to anything they were missing. Like, it hit me deep when they said, you know, there's the cookie sheets are gross, or the towel rack fell off the wall. Normally you read a maintenance task, you're like, oh, towel rack, all right, whatever. But to hear it from my brother, to say he put the towel on there, and he wasn't even being mean, he was just being like funny, like, hey, the towel rack fell off. Oh, it hit harder. And then I heard their confusion more than I've ever heard guest confusion about, how do I know when to get the slopes in time? Where are the snowshoe trails? Well, how would I get there? Where do I rent snowshoes? Oh, what do I bring to the hot springs? We want to get a massage. Where's the best place, and how can you get in last minute? All of those questions they were asking me, I thought, ooh, I don't know if I have this easy for guests to find. These are very normal guest questions. And, you know, I kind of am equating my brother to being equal to my mother, is that I was paying attention way more than I do to an anonymous guest. And I feel guilty saying this, but I'm sharing it because I think everybody out there can feel this. When you know the person, it's much more personal when they have an issue.
I just thought of two words. You want them to be happy and you want them to be proud. And that's why you are personally involving yourself in it. So I have to ask, so you inspected the house, the property they stayed in. Did you do a good enough job, or did they find things where you're like, oh God, I missed that?
No. In fact, I kept asking them, how is it? And they didn't have any complaints. So I think I did a really good job.
Good. All right.
But I did have to reorganize the entire kitchen. And, you know, it hit home. So I think, like, what you just said, Tim, is so powerful. And that is, we need to get somehow in a empathetic mindset of, we need all of our guests to be our mother or brother. We need to say, I want them to be proud and happy. Would I be proud and happy if this guest that I have no idea about anything about them except how many of them are there and what their name is, would I feel proud for them to stay in this home, just like if it was my mom?
Well, and are they proud with the choice they made too? So yeah, those are two good words. I just thought of that, by the way. So pullover moment, folks. Tim thought of something, but we've kind of broken this down. Originally, you had 3 areas. I'm going to throw a 4th area in here as well. And that kind of the 4 aspects of a stay. Pre-booking,
so,
pre-arrival,
yes.
The stay itself, and I want to throw in there the post-stay as a 4th area, because I think that's something as well.
So let's start in to the pre-booking. You may not even think about that. Like, what do you mean? That's not their experience. Oh, yes, it is, and it makes a difference how they think about you. Even if they book with you and they didn't have an awesome experience to start the booking, that sticks with them. So, couple points on this on pre-booking. I feel you should take a full hour, maybe 7, out of your day, shut down the distractions. That means email, phone, etc. Pretend you're going on a vacation to a place you've never been. I mean, pick somewhere awesome. Like, how about Bali? You like that? You want to do that, Tim? Let's go to Bali.
Yeah. All right. What do I do?
And then I feel like you should research that online. Like, you have never been to Bali. What the heck? I don't know. Is Bali big or is it small? I think of it as having like two houses on it, but that's probably like when I got to Maui and realized it was a giant city. Research it online. See how helpless you feel. Notice how you're reacting to the information you're getting online. And then call some vacation rental companies. Look at VRBO and Airbnb. See how it feels. If you have not done this, it is critical. I just did it because we're going to Maine for a wedding in September. And I was getting really frustrated. Like, I don't know where Kennebunkport is versus a Gunquit, these different places I've never heard of. So what do you think about that, first of all, with pre-booking?
I think it's fantastic. I was just imagining back to the one of the last vacations I booked for my family was in Grand Cayman in the Cayman Islands. I had the worst time figuring out what airlines serve the place. Are there direct flights? And then what time of the day do they arrive? And then finding a vacation rental firm. I actually never did find a vacation rental firm there. I'm sure they exist, but you couldn't prove it by me through the pre-booking process. So I was frustrated before we started. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And writing all of those thoughts down, because the second step of the pre-booking guest experience, what I do that to my mother, is now I want you to search your own destination. And I want you to look at your website. And I want you to come up with a scenario of, before you even start doing that, come up with a scenario of, okay, let's pretend there's seven of us. Let's say it's, you know, my husband, me, my kids, and it's, I don't know, another family. What's your story? And then, did you find any properties on your website? Was it easy to find them? Do you have any questions about the area that are not answered on your website? Just really pretend so much you have never been to this place and call your company. You know, it's hard to do with your voice, so try to get maybe a family member to do it, record it. How did that go? If you're not listening to calls, guys, you know how I feel about that. Mm-hmm. Stop this podcast, go listen to calls and figure out how to do that, and then resume this podcast. Mm-hmm. But really analyze if you're giving the potential, your potential guests, the very best info to book with your company. And not just book with your company, but about the area, like Tim said. Think they don't necessarily know anything about this place, much less you. So you will learn gobs by doing this activity.
I agree. One of our previous guests was Doug Kennedy. We had him on in the fall, and he has been a trainer of my folks for years. And one of his tactics, I don't think he'll be angry for me giving this away, is to have a training session with the group where you come up with scenarios. Okay, you two over here are going to be a bunch of middle-aged ladies getting away for a girls' weekend. Okay, you over here are going to be a group of seven, and this is a family reunion to celebrate your grandfather's 75th birthday. And you over here are going to, and then so they would call competitors and find out how they were treated, and then of course, they were all, oh, we'd do much better than that. And then, of course, he would play the recordings where he did the same thing to us.
Oh.
It wasn't so good, so to speak. But at any rate, you're absolutely right. You got to take time to do this if you really are serious about delivery of service.
Yeah, that is, you know what's so good about that activity you just described is it's back to personas, if you've read anything about creating personas of different types of guests. I think we all look at our website and our business from our perspective. Like, I look at it from, okay, I have two kids, they're young, I have a husband. What does this answer my question? Have you looked at your website as a bunch of middle-aged ladies going on a girls' trip? Does it explain anything they can do that's different than what the 11-year-old kids can do? I mean, that's good stuff.
Right. And, of course, some of the answers you get, you may be able to make changes immediately. Some of this stuff is going to be more long-term. You may need to redo your website. That's not going to be a quick fix, but it is important to know where you stand.
Or I've been thinking lately about when I was looking at going to Maine, I wanted to see the area. I wanted to see what it looks like at the shops and the restaurants and downtown and what's the vibe. And I realized that some websites, especially hotels, have a gallery area of photos. That's nothing to do with the property. It's about the area. And I think we're going to add that to both of our websites, a gallery of our place? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it like here?
Mm-hmm. Peter Lormer talked about that when we had him on a few episodes ago. He was talking about taking pictures of the coffee shop down the street or the really popular restaurant or the cupcake. He was really fixated on cupcakes, if you remember. And so things like that.
Well, they're really good, Tim. Yeah. Cupcakes are there. I just had one this week. They are good. Really good.
I'm going to have one after this broadcast probably. So there you go. So pre-booking is the first pre. And we have another pre as well as item number two on our list. And that would be the pre-arrival process.
Yes, the pre-arrival. So you got them to book. Hopefully they're happy. They're excited about their stay. But just remember, they did not think about getting ready for their arrival until 5 minutes before they were arriving usually. So you have to go through this process and really go through it, you guys. Don't just say, yeah, I know we're good on that. You have to say what happens before they get here. So a couple things to think about, or maybe several. I think that you, every 6 months, should look at all of your pre-arrival communication and the order in which it arrives. I've noticed in the past that we say, oh, let's create a new email they get and let's put it here. Or let's update that one email, but maybe we don't look at the others. And I guess like a year and a half ago, we had kludgy emails. First of all, they weren't as pretty as I wanted them to be. And the information was all over the map. I suggest you order the information in a timely way, repeat key information, make all of your emails look the same because the branding of it, it tells that guest, oh, this is one from that company. I'm not just a spam message, but one I need to keep, and dig in deep on that. Another thing, Tim, I think is to make a list of, let's go with 20 questions you think the guest will have. Sit with your guest experience front desk team. Ask them what these questions would be. They will have them for you. They'll say, oh, they always ask this. It's mm-hmm. like, well, if they're always asking that, you're not answering that as probably best you can. So see if those questions are answered in several communications.
I'm going to call this the Claire Ricewerg segment here, the pre-arrival. Remember back on episode 27, I think the title of it was, Why Are We Doing That? And that's what you're doing here. You're going through this from a guest perspective, and you were talking about the silos before and the disconnects to guests and what have you. And we're not answering their questions. We're not hearing our folks out there and their concerns. We're not being empathetic. We're not giving them the ability to be happy. We're not giving them the ability to be proud of what they're doing. So I have a saying, don't expect, inspect. And that's what you're saying here throughout this whole pre-arrival thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and also look at your tone, Tim. You know, I've gone to quite a few vacation rental companies as a guest, and sometimes these emails are like this. Please do not arrive before 4 o'clock. Please take the trash out. Please make sure you do this. Do not do this. Right. Do not do this. Don't call us. Don't email
us. No.
You know.
Yeah.
All make sure the tone of these emails, texts, whatever, are the tone you want for your company. Yeah. And also, Peter Reberg, who was also on our show, he recently came and stayed with us in Winter Park, and he sent me a very good, candid feedback that I've taken a lot from. And one of them was, Sarah, your emails are too long before I get there. Mm. And he said that he simplified his check-in email to be real short. And he said people are actually reading it. And I don't know if I've mentioned this. Have I told you, Tim, about this conference I went to here in Steamboat, and they said TLDR?
No.
That's a new thing. It means too long, didn't read. That's what you can write back to my emails when I send them to you. So I think some of us might have emails that are TLDR. What do you think?
I like it. You know, we've talked around another subject as well, and that goes to texting. We have talked to several people. Matter of fact, in a rapid fire round, we've asked people, are you texting your guests? And everybody's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing that. I really don't think many people are doing it. And the ones that are doing it, I don't think they're doing it very effectively. So if you can communicate a message in 160 characters, that's what you should be doing. That's what I'm thinking as you're talking about those shorter emails. And so we are focusing more on the texting. We are texting people 10 days in advance, 5 days in advance, day of arrival, hour after arrival. And I'm finding that the interaction is much better with guests because we are being succinct in our communication, and we're inviting them to communicate with us on their terms.
Good on you. So here's my question. You're getting good feedback. You're getting positive feedback on that?
Tremendous. I have a couple of people. Actually, during the season, we had something like 5 people who were in charge of this last year. And I want to say we had something on the order of 20,000 interactions with people through text last year.
Wow. And you obviously have that system that you can organize who are these people texting, not exactly their personal cell phones of your staff.
Right.
So question, for example, 10 days out you text, what might you be saying in 160 characters?
Well, we're touching base on the arrival information. So we have emailed them like a door code, directions, any check-in procedures they need to have. The text will be to be checking to make sure they don't have any additional questions. This is the number to text if there's anything that comes up between now and arrival.
I think that's the wave of the future. We're just having more and more guests show up and saying, I don't have any of the information. But of course they do. It's just deep in their email and they never found it. Another thing, Tim, is directions. I'd love to hear how you handle this. I think we take on a property, we write the directions quick, and we just are like, that's good. I don't know. We're in a hurry, and we don't quite get the mileage of when to turn right and when to turn left. Look at your directions and see if you really can find the place. I also love it when we give guests a picture of the house and remind them what they are looking for, because that's how your stay starts, and that's how the fight starts with the husband and the wife in the front of the Suburban. Where am I going? I don't know. They didn't give it to us. What a stupid company. So how do you handle directions?
Well, the first thought I had was going back decades ago when my father had a vacation rental firm, and he would give written directions at check-in, right? And he would always take people to their house via properties he had for sale. Which is interesting. It wouldn't be the most direct route. In other words, go down US 158 for 2.5 miles and take a right on Bickett Street. Please note the sign on the corner of Bickett Street.
No way, really? That's awesome.
That's old guerrilla marketing back in the day, where they'd think, why am I going north when a house is south or whatever? But anyway, I think we have morphed now back to the technology discussion a moment ago. I'm not really finding issues with directions with our guests. I'm not hearing anything back that we're giving poor directions, because I think they're taking it on their own. Our houses are just that, houses. We don't have a lot of condominium or townhomes, and so there's not a lot of distinctive unit on the left or unit on the second floor kind of thing. I can give a physical address of the property, and I will do that in advance, and most of them do type it in some sort of GPS. So we are lucky in that sense, but I will say that we have had to advise people of glitches with GPS systems that take you down roads that you shouldn't go down, like taking you through neighborhoods with 20-mile-an-hour speed limits that don't necessarily want through traffic. We've found issues like that that we've had to head off. But otherwise, we've been lucky.
So maybe in your case, it's good to put, it's fine to use Google Maps for this,
yes,
but except for this one thing we found, this one exception, warning, don't do this one thing it's going to tell you to do.
Right.
We are not the same. Our Google Maps half the time can't even figure out our area. I don't know what it is, especially in Winter Park. And then some of these condo complexes, it is like a military operation to figure out what you're doing. I mean, you got to know where the parking garage is. How do you get in the parking garage? How does it let you in? Then which side of this giant parking garage do you park in? And then which elevator? And then which floor? And then on and on.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people deal with more maybe what I'm handling in that way.
Right.
And you should walk through it and say, is this clear and easy? Or maybe it's, this one is not so much, would you do this to your mother? It's, would you do this to your marriage? would you cause a man and woman to have to go through this problem?
Well, the other thing you have to deal with as well is a lot of fly-in traffic. So they've already had the stress and emotional draining of going through security and getting their luggage and getting the rental car, and then they've driven 2 hours, and then they can't find the dang parking place. You know, so it's like the last straw. So I feel for you.
Just like the pre-booking where Doug Kennedy said you should come up with a scenario, I think you should also do that with the pre-arrival. For example, think about someone that's flying in at 11 a.m., Let's say you can fly in close to your destination like you can in Steamboat, but check-in is until 4, remember? So what now? So they've got these giant suitcases, their skis, their boots, they're not allowed to check in at 4, and they're sitting at the airport with their rental car. Okay, you better have something for them to do. They can't go shopping downtown, really. I mean, I guess they could, but a lot of them take a shuttle. And so we had to work on a way to handle those guests before they can come to the property.
Okay, we still got two more areas to cover, and so let's move along. The next one would be, they actually arrived. They figured out your directions. They figured out where the parking place was, and the property's on the second floor. They got there, and they're in the property. So the whole stay thing and treating your people as you would treat your mother. You have some good thoughts on this as well, I know.
This is the one that really hits me with the family scenario that would you do this to your mother? This is when I really feel it. When I have a good friend come stay at one of our properties, or Peter Reberg staying in Winter Park, or my mother or my brother, this is where I feel it. And this is where I think I told you this isn't going to be an easy process, but you should stay in your properties at least, I think, every 6 months, but at least once a year. And you can't just stay one night. You need to stay at least 2 days, in my opinion. And I also think you need to not just stay there by yourself, because staying in a property by yourself, you're not doing the things that 9 people would do. You're not cooking a giant meal. You're not trying to all sit around that living room and see if you should pull the furniture downstairs. So what do you think about that, Tim? Do you ever stay in your properties?
I am guilty. I raise my hand. You are, when you're right, you're right. And this is the first time today I've told you you're right and I'm wrong, but you're right and I'm wrong on this, because I have not done that. I actually have a rental property. I have never stayed in that property.
Shame. Oh, Tim.
Isn't that bad? Yeah. I'm there every week, but I don't really know how the king size bed feels.
And can we give Tim a challenge? Tim, yes. Can we give you we're going to give you a challenge.
Okay,
are you ready?
That? Yes, ma'am.
Okay. By May 1st,
okay,
before your big season starts,
You
and Deb are going to spend 2 nights in your rental property.
Okay.
What do you think? Can you do it?
I think we can, yes. I think we actually...
Okay, and I want a report back.
Okay. I'll see what we can get done. I'm sure it will be eye-opening. I thought the knives were sharper than this. I thought the cookware was in better shape. I thought I had 14 wine glasses, not 4.
Yeah, I didn't know I ran into that piece of furniture every time I turned around. The owners that never stay in their properties, those are actually the properties that are hardest to handle, and because the owners usually find those little quirks about their home. So when you stay in the property, you got to cook, you got to spill something. See, do you have anything to clean it up? You got to use the TVs. You got to try to play a movie. Try to blast some music. I mean, you're going to stay with a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. You want to have some music. Use the internet. Is it fast?
Right.
Try to close the blinds. Are they all knotted up and stuck? What does it feel like at night? Is there enough lighting? All of those things are critical. So we have actually made a new rule at both of our companies that any new property we take on, staff have to stay there and come with not a huge group, but not just one person. And they have to try everything. And we just say to owners, this is the rules. We have to test your property out.
That's fantastic. I bet it makes a big difference.
It really does. You notice things you don't notice during inspection. It's hard to explain, but for example, my brother's saying that towel rack fell off. Well, if the towels are beautifully put on the towel rack, when you're inspecting, you don't go and like pull the towel rack to see if it's loose, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then also when you're inspecting, you don't have 6 things you want to hang up in the hallway and say, why aren't there any hooks here? Okay, so those are user problems, not inspection problems. And the only way you can find them is to physically stay there. Mm-hmm. I also think you should invite your quote unquote mother to stay there. So whether it's my brother or it's your good friend or it's Peter Reberg, you can have Tim and I come stay. Have somebody you really care about impressing stay in a property and get a lot of feedback from them, because it will impact you, unfortunately, more than an anonymous guest.
Yep. You'll definitely see things you've never seen before. I feel that's what I'm going to experience here over the next couple of weeks as I take on your challenge. So anything else on the stay before we get to the final area?
You know, I think in general, these first three, and of course the last one too, it gets to a comparison I thought of recently. My mother was in the hospital for an extended amount of time in December, and I watched the nurses have to care for my mother, even though my mother was a stranger. And I thought, wow, that is a hard task, right? I care about my mom and I'm trying to help her with all these things, but she's my mother. And these nurses have to come in, this person they've never seen before, and try to help them get better. And I'm going to relate it to the vacation rental world, because I truly want us to give all of ourselves a challenge to care about these anonymous guests in that same way. They are somebody else's mother. They're somebody else's brother, friend. We need to think about it, that it matters they have a wonderful vacation.
Mm-hmm. Now, so the fourth one here that I've kind of thrown in here is the post-stay. And I harken back to my days when my mother was alive, and I would maybe have her over for dinner. And she'd be very polite, but then I would ask after the fact, "So, Mom, what did you think?" "Well, dear, the roast was a little salty." So that feedback that only a mother will give. And so I guess the point is, on the post-stay, you do need to get real, honest feedback about how it went. Obviously, you want to do these things right on the first three, but you want to hear how it went at the end. And so a lot of companies are now using this net promoter score, whereas if you see a survey that says rank something on a scale of 1 to 10, you can immediately go ding, 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 net promoter score. So the 9s and 10s are promoters, 7s and 8s are neutrals, 6 and below are detractors. And so you're looking for a positive number to be good, right? It can go anywhere from a negative 100 to a positive 100. And so there's various debates about what a world-class score is, but any positive number is good, right? But what I challenge some companies to do is to make sure you're polling everyone and you're getting the data you need. I see so often these net promoter scores that are irrationally high, and then you dig behind it and you find out, well, you only polled the people at these 14 properties, or you only polled the people when the weather was good, or you only polled them this out or the other. So as you have a survey process, I would just challenge you out there to make sure you're getting real feedback about not only the property, but the process.
That's good. So tell me how you do that. How do you get the net promoter score? Are you sending that from your system and just asking that question?
Well, our survey is simple. We have only two questions. And that is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to recommend my company if a friend or family member were to be staying in this area? And then the second question is, how likely would you be to recommend this house? And then you leave an open box for why or what have you. But it's amazing what people will tell you. And the other thing is, it needs to be brief. People are pressed for time. They don't want to take a 32-question survey. They want to get in and out in 3 minutes, and this can allow them to do that. It allows them to sound off in whatever ways they want, and it gives you real feedback. And again, don't cherry pick your answers.
So are you able then to aggregate the numbers, and that's how you see your net promoter score?
I am. Yes, ma'am. I have somebody who's in charge of that, and they send out the surveys every week. And you know, we get probably 30% of our guests fill out the survey. You know, some just don't want to be bothered. You know they're not going to fill it out. And back in the day, I remember when we would do paper surveys, we would say, if you get a 5% response, that's great. I don't think that's the number anymore. I think it's probably closer to 25% is a good number. If you're getting 25% electronic surveys, you're doing really well. We're getting a little higher than that because I think of the simplicity of it. But again, you want to make sure you're getting it out there and giving them the opportunity to give you feedback, positive and negative.
I can't reiterate enough how much it needs to be simple. I just rented a car and they sent me like a 7-question detailed survey. I'm like, it's just a car. Like, ask me if I like the car or not. And can we be done here?
Yes, right.
The other thing, Tim, last thing on the post day is, yes, I do think net promoter score is really important. As you know, I think you should ask your owners on that too, every 6 months or so. But something about everything we talked about today that's critical is that we're getting into the details. So net promoter score can just tell you how you're doing overall, which is wonderful. But an actual guest will rarely give you detailed feedback if it's minor. So if it's that little tweak that kind of annoyed them. For example, my sister-in-law told me that she got three reminders of the checkout time. She got a phone call the night before, she got an email, and she got a text. She was like, it was a little over the top, Sarah. Mm. It was kind of like, get the heck out at 10. And I don't know if a regular guest would say that. They would just leave with a little bit of like, geez, you know? So that's why you have to do these things yourself. That's why you have to do the pre-booking test experiments. That's why you have to do the pre-arrival and look at what you're sending and analyze it. And that's why Tim has to stay in his vacation rental, because he has to experience it himself, because you won't see the little tiny things that add up to a not so awesome experience.
Excellent. Time flies when we're having fun and getting together for these podcasts. And so it's time for not so hot off the press, but definitely happening, Sarah.
And today we have a speculative comment, and that is that we read it on VRM Intel, so it's public, but that Wyndham is sending a lot of signals that they're selling their North American business. So that would be big news. They're, I think, the second largest vacation rental company in the U.S. Is that right, Tim?
Yes. I was just looking at this. It has sold its market-leading European vacation rental business for $1.3 billion. The thought is, within the next year, we're going to see the North American sold off as well, which is interesting because we just had Simon Lehman on recently, who talked about what a good job Wyndham was doing, and hats off to them for giving it a try, but I guess their patience is worn a little thin.
Yeah, you got to wonder, is it like the market's ripe to give them a lot of cash for their business? Or is it not going so well? And possibly I have insider information here in one of my markets where they operate. And let's just say I'm adding a lot of properties because maybe they're not doing as great of a job as they could be. So they seem to be not succeeding in my spot. And I wonder if that's happening around the country, which of course would back up my theory that it's really, 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 really hard to have multiple destinations when you get above 20 or more.
Right. And then we also hear a rampant rumor that Vacasa is closer than ever to maybe doing an IPO and going public, which will be interesting and maybe what they've been gearing for a long time. We first heard this about a year ago. Back in May of last year, we heard they were gearing up for an IPO. They continue to get private funding. They continue to get more properties under their belt, so to speak, and we'll see what happens there. That will be another. We'll follow up on that and let you know in the future as well.
Do you know what would be great about them doing an IPO is that they'll have to answer to their stockholders, and that'll get real interesting on their profitability.
Okay, so that pretty much wraps it up. We had four quick points for you, but they were big, meaty ones as we talk about, would you do that to your mother? And so one of the areas we looked at was the pre-booking area, making sure you are positioned properly when somebody's researching your area. What are you doing to make sure you're designating yourself and differentiating yourself out there to the guests?
And number two is, before they get there, look at all of the communication you're sending them. Are you answering their questions? Are you over-communicating, under-communicating? And also look at the way you're telling them to find the home. Is it a pleasant marriage experience, or is it a fight ready to happen?
Number three is the stay. I was just challenged to have a homework assignment. I'm going to go stay in a vacation rental and find out how it's going for my guests.
All right. We'll ask Tim in May how his staycation went. And number four is post-stay. As Tim says, look at that net promoter score. Don't ignore the comments that maybe you don't want to see. And I think you should also look at the detail, of course, of their comments, of the little things that bug the guest.
Yep. And so the overriding point for me from this week's episode is that I need to make sure my guests are happy and proud when they come and stay with me. And I want to make sure I know what's happening out there. So I'm going to go stay in a property.
Yes, get out there and treat those guests as if they were your most favorite friend.
All right, that'll do it for this week.
And Tim, we would love to hear from any of our listeners about challenging yourself to stay in a property, looking at your pre-arrival or your pre-booking. Share with us what you learned.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear about that. Okay, so that'll do it for this time. As always, thanks, Sarah, for your nuggets and your time, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Take care. Bye, Tim.
Bye. So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Sarah and T, Professional Vacation Rental Managers Podcast, brought to you by Sarah Bradford of Winter Park Lodging Company and Steamboat Lodging Company, as well as Tim Cafferty of Outer Banks Blue and Sandbridge Blue Realty Services. Together, Sarah and Tim manage more than 600 privately owned vacation rental properties, and both are regarded as experts in the vacation rental management industry. Music provided by Ben Sound. We encourage your participation on this podcast by sharing it with friends, and please feel free to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Comments or reviews on this particular podcast can be made on their website, sarahandt.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast as well as provide them feedback on this episode or give them ideas for future topics. We look forward to speaking with you next time on Sarah and T.